purity of speech. Words matter.
For a good tree does not bear bad fruit, nor does a bad tree bear good fruit. For every tree is known by its own fruit. For men do not gather figs from thorns, nor do they gather grapes from a bramble bush. A good man, out of the good treasure of his heart, brings forth good. And an evil man, out of the evil treasure of his heart, brings forth evil. Out of the abundance of the heart, his mouth speaks.
Okay, thank you, Liz. So the Lord makes it very clear here, out of the abundance of the heart, his mouth speaks. So if it's a good heart, out comes good, clean, pure speech. If it's a corrupt one, out comes corrupt words. Just like we might grow a garden, right? And some years may be better than others. And the fruit that we get from the vine, if it's a good plant, you know, it's going to be a good fruit. But if it's been eaten away by worms or some kind of mold or fungus gets upon it, it destroys the plant, which in turn destroys its fruit. And so the Lord is saying we can know a lot about the kind of person on the inside by the words they use on the outside. Let's look at what Jesus said over in Matthew 12. Matthew 12, 33 through 37. If someone would read those verses, please.
Either make a tree good and its fruit good, or else make a tree bad and its fruit bad. For a tree is known by its fruit. Brood of vipers, how can you, being evil, speak good things? For out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. A good man, out of the good treasure of his heart, brings forth good things. An evil man, out of the evil treasure, brings forth evil things. I say to you that for every idle word man may speak, they will give an account of it in the day of judgment. By your words, you will be justified. By your words, you will be
condemned. Okay, thank you, Rich. So again, Jesus uses that same principle over here and with application to some of those that were around him, the Pharisees and the scribes, and he says these things to them. And does that mean that every single word that came out of their mouth was always terrible and ugly? Right. I mean, even Hitler used some good words from time to time, right? Every person knows how to say a thank you or please, or to be kind to their mother, or to a baby child, right? But the Lord says that ultimately, one has the capacity to begin also saying things that are evil and unthankful and disgusting. And if they go down that route and use that, then we see ultimately what really is in that person's heart. It's kind of like Brother Hoagland said. It's also like this book said. Brother Hoagland talked about the bug that was being squished. The insides come out. It's not very pretty. The book here that we read last time talked about a sponge absorbing everything around it. And when you squish the sponge, out comes what it was being surrounded by. And the same is also when that pressure moment comes. Yes, someone can be very kind and lovely to an elderly person, but in a pressure moment, you know, maybe someone's done something mean to them. Maybe they got cut off on the road by a fast driver, or whatever it may be, and the sponge is squished, and out comes the profanity. Right? Because ultimately, there was that capacity within their heart that they gave room to. In like manner, these Pharisees knew had to be kind from time to time. But when Jesus pressed on the heart by his teachings and his influence, out came their attitude about Jesus Christ. And he said, I know what kind of tree you are. I know what you're treasuring within your heart, because it's been squeezed and it has now come to the surface. And here's what he says. It's very, very telling, very poignant when he says in verse 36, but I say to you that for every idle word men may speak, they will give an account of it in the day of judgment. For by your words you will be justified, and by your words you will be condemned. Wow, that is strong. And you know what? There are some words that I have uttered that I hope I never have to face in judgment. And I know that that can be the case if, having become a Christian, having my sins washed away, and that if I even made those words after becoming such, that I pray to God to forgive me of such speech, to promise to do my best never to utter such speech, that is repent, then He is willing to forgive me of those words I've used in the past. But if I, again, keep the capacity with my heart, the allowance to say those things, then He knows what's in the heart. John 3 says, He knows what's in the heart of man. He does not need man to tell Him. And so those words then would follow me to judgment if I've allowed that capacity to stay there. I've not really repented. And then for every idle word as well. And we'll talk a little more about that as we go along. Very, very important texts here that tell us words matter. Any comments about these? Yes, Judy. Right, right. Like poisonous snakes, you know, seeking to do harm, right? Ultimately to the cause of Christ. And there he was calling them out for that. Yes.
I grew up hearing an expression like, count to them, I forget what the number is, before you speak. Mm. And it's just the idea of stopping and thinking and not just, you know, regurgitating something that's in there, you know, giving some thought. But, you know, that steam is, you know, and you might not ever bring it up to somebody again, but you still, we're human, that steam is still there.
Right, right. And the scripture says to be swift to hear, slow to speak. Right, because there's wisdom in that. Because when we really feel like responding quick, it's usually not going to be the right words. Good. Anybody else? All right, let's turn over to James chapter 3. And we really can't study purity of speech without looking at James chapter 3. Where there James gives great word pictures about the power of the tongue. And that verse that I just quoted just a moment ago also comes from James. That's James 1:19, to be swift to hear, slow to speak. So James chapter 3, let's get two readers. If I can have one reader read verses 1 through 6, and then have another reader read verses 7 through 12. Chapter 3, 1 through 6.
My brethren, let not many of you become teachers, knowing that we shall receive a certain judgment. For we all stumble in many things. If anyone does not stumble in word, he is a perfect man, able also to rile the whole body. Indeed, we put bits in the horses' mouths that they may obey us, and we turn the whole body. Look also at ships, although they are so large and are driven by fierce winds, they are turned by a very small rudder wherever all desires. Even so, the tongue is a little member and boasts great things. So see how great a force a little fire kindles. And the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. The tongue is so set among our members that it defiles the whole body and sets on fire the corpse of nature, and it is set on fire by hell.
And if someone read verses 7 through 12.
Wherever kind of beast and bird, a reptile creature of the sea, is tamed and has been tamed by mankind. But no man can tame the tongue, it is an unruly evil. Full of deadly poison. With it we bless our God and Father, and with it we curse man, who have been made in the similitude of God. Out of the same mouth proceed blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not to be so. Does a spring send forth fresh water and bitter from the same oak? In a fig tree, my brethren, bear olives.
right. Thank you, TJ and Thomas. So within these 12 verses, there are at least five or six word pictures that are given to describe the power of the tongue. So the first ones there are the bit and bridle in the horse's mouth and the ship's rudder. Now, what kind of picture does that paint in regards to the tongue and its abilities? So that wields that ultimate control over we might say, the destiny of the beast. It's going to go here or there, or way over that way. And so it's just that small little piece, right? Like the tongue.
The rudder is not a very big piece of equipment on a ship.
Right.
Yet it guides the ship.
Right. In comparison to the ship, the rudder is so much smaller. But again, like the horse, it's guided by that small little piece. So the same is true with our tongue. It really can ultimately shape the destiny of our entire bodies. Where we go, if we go here or there, or land up in the county jail, right? I mean, it can really change the destiny of who we are. A lot of power there. What about the small flame, the little flame of fire? What does that paint for us? Right. Right. So we've seen on the news all these wildfires going on, right? I mean, you catch this thing early, you can stamp it out, you can put it out, but let it go for just long enough and it ignites everything. And so again, is the person that can control their tongue, right? You know, think before you speak is the old saying, as we mentioned. If you can do that, you'll go a long way in terms of avoiding some forest fires in your life. Nip it in the bud. Next, he talks about a spring, right? A fresh spring water. It does not yield both salt or fresh water from the same place. What are some benefits that one gets from a spring?
It's cooling, refreshing, and you enjoy it.
Okay. Okay, right. So it brings a blessing, right? Satisfaction, some comfort. Whereas the bitter water, it leaves a bad taste in the mouth. And so James actually says out of the same water it can't produce both, right? And so he's trying to say that, again, out of the same mouth, both should not be able to come, right? It's the old illustration the Lord used about the fruit, good tree, bad tree. Right? You're not going to pull a good apple from a bad tree. It's an impossibility. Well, he's saying also you shouldn't be able to get salt water from a fresh spring. So why would we think that we could get bad words, bad attitude, all the things that we were talking about earlier from supposedly a clean source? Can't be. It means that the source is not clean, right? Mentions the fig tree, so he uses there also the illustration that Jesus used as well, right? Fig tree, can it bear olives, or a grapevine bear figs? We know it's not possible. And so it ought to be not possible too that we would not use such foul speech in our lives. Words matter to God. The Bible is very, very clear about this. In our booklet, it gave some examples. It says, what kind of language do sports fans use when they dislike the referee's call? Right. If you've been to some of those games, you know what they say. And it's sad how so many multitudes can repeat the same words. It shows the corruption in their heart. What kind of things do drivers say when they get enraged over traffic? Right. May not even be a word, it may be a hand gesture, right?
In this day and age, you know, somebody can get killed.
Yeah, it's very possible.
I've seen it happen, you know. And with the ball game example, they get thrown out often.
Yeah, it depends, you know. Yes.
Lots of circumstances that follow not being in control of our time.
Right, right. Good comments. Yes, Judy. Right. So our last lesson was talking about that, right? Being surrounded by that kind of language, whether it be through coworkers or friends, or the music we listen to, or the shows we watch, or the movies we watch. It saturates that sponge so it can more easier come out. And so trying to practice purity, we try to distance ourselves from those things to give us an advantage in our time of temptation. Right.
And you know, that's why it's like, you know, when I sub, often we would hear the kids in school use language that we know where they heard it, and it's just really sad.
It is, yes. That's right. Good. Yes, after you hear it, then you have to make a choice, you know. If we have the right heart, we'll make the right choices. But we are trying to give ourselves, like I said, an advantage in this wicked world. Well, can you think of a person in the Bible that got in trouble for their words? Okay, go ahead.
He made a foolish promise to his stepdaughter that he would give her anything that she wanted. And she pleased him. But she in turn asked for the head of John the Baptist.
Right. Right, right. Very good. So he bit off more than he could chew, and he didn't realize until it was too late. Good. Who else? Yes, Judy. Right. And he started to swear and curse, saying, "I do not know the man." Right. And then when he was exposed by the third rooster crow, he took off because he was ashamed for what he had done and what he'd become. Now where's the pressure? So in the old Peter, right? Anybody else? Yes.
Talk about Jephthah, the judge, mm-hmm. You know, because he vowed to God that if he let him, you know, win the battle against the Amorites, that whoever he met first met, you know, he would get sacrificed. I don't think that's the word he used, but and it was his daughter, his only daughter.
All right. All right, that's good. Jephthah's another. Mm-hmm. Wrath vow. Rash vow, excuse me. I was thinking of Job. You know, Job later on said that I uttered things I did not understand. I should have held my peace. So there's those times when we don't understand the whys of life, right? And we say things we ought not. Job was in that category. And he learned that he should have just tried to trust God in those situations, as we need to as well. Yes, Tim?
Yeah, maybe.
Hmm. Right, right.
I guess it depends on what perspective or what standard you're looking at. Secular basis, you can say that the apostle got himself down for preaching from jail, you know, depending on what standard you're looking at.
Right. So they did right with God, but wrong with man, and they paid the price for it.
That was their standard. So their mouths got them with their own message.
Right. Good point, good point. They were standing for the truth, but it did cost them something.
I was thinking about Darius with Daniel.
Mm-hmm.
Conceded to the law that the people brought to him.
Right, right. Well, good. Good examples, everybody. So on page 19, he now addresses God's words. And there, just real quickly in summation, he talks about how God is truth, right? That's why we're not to be lying, right? It's against God's character, because God himself is truth. God has integrity, right? And that's why God's never duplicitous. He's not a hypocrite. He says exactly what he means and does what he says. Also further, we're not told to swear with oaths there in Matthew chapter 5, because God always accomplishes everything that he says he will do. And he wants our yes to be yes and our no to be no. God has never uttered an idle word, right? And so he expects us to also refrain from idle words. God's words are pure, powerful, and purposed, and our speech should be too. That's how that last page ends on page 20. So I summed up here, the pursuit of purity is to change us into the image and likeness of our God. Remember that? 1 John 3:3, he who has his hope in him purifies himself just as he is pure. So that's our pursuit, to change ourselves as the best we can into the image and likeness of our God, and our speech then into his speech. As God does not lie, we do not lie, so we can be of truth. As God is not hypocrite, we should not be duplicitous in our speaking. And all these things we mentioned. So our words are very, very important. Now, real quickly, in Ephesians chapter 4 and 5. Let's look at some scriptures there where we see God tell us to aim for this, to pursue for this. So I'll read these real quick here in Ephesians 4, 25. He says, "Therefore, put away lying. Let each one of you speak truth with his neighbor, for we are members of one another." And so we're to put away lying, he says. In chapter 4 and verse 29, "Let no corrupt word proceed out of your mouth, but what is good for necessary edification, that it may impart grace to the hearers." And so corruption is put aside. God is not a corrupt God. He's a pure God. We put aside corruption, and we don what is good for edification, to build one up in the holy faith. In chapter 5, verse 4, "Neither filthiness, nor foolish talking, nor coarse jesting, which are not fitting, but rather giving of thanks." And so, language again that is filthy, that is absolutely worldly, and in also these off-color jokes, coarse jesting. He says this is not something that is done by the children of God. It's not fitting, he says. Kind of like the bad fruit I found on a good tree. It doesn't fit there. Well, these words don't fit on the disciple of Christ, but rather giving thanks. Now he goes on to say, verse 5, "For you know this, that no fornicator, unclean person, nor covetous man who is an idolater has any inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and God." God says they will not be there. They shall not inherit that eternal heavenly home, because they won't fit there with that kind of heart and that kind of speech. Now, we can do pretty good about not going out in left field. At least we should. There may be some Christians that have a major struggle with some bad words, and that I would like to say that is the exception, the vast exception to the rule. But are we still pursuing purity if we're not out in left field? If we are found approaching even the line, but not crossing over, don't you think then we're going in the wrong direction still? Because again, the pursuit of purity runs in the direction of God. So turn to page 21, and let's now talk about the section, "Your Words." Page 21. The first paragraph there says, there are three kinds of speech that need to be addressed: euphemisms, gossip, and complaining. If our speech was completely pure, such would never leave our lips. Yet we're especially vulnerable to these. You know you shouldn't cuss, and that you ought to bite your tongue when you get really mad, right? But we can easily get into speech patterns of euphemisms, gossip, and complaint, and never think anything about it. So these are three areas of speech that the booklet addresses next. Three kinds of speech to address: euphemisms, gossip, and complaining. Because sometimes we might give ourselves the gold star that we've passed with flying colors, and yet we are falling short in these areas. Because I don't use the F word or the S word, and so I must be pretty clean. And yet we might be guilty of euphemisms. What we need to recognize and realize first off is that there are certain words that do not originate with God or to be used in a godly way. And so we must always be very careful with the word choice of the world. In Nehemiah 13, verse 24, this reference was not in the booklet, but it made me think about it. In Nehemiah 13, there was a time when God's people was trying to become more separate from the world because God did not want them to intermarry or to be led astray by the ways of the world. And there were some that had done that very thing. And there in Nehemiah 13:24 it says, "And half their children spoke the language of Ashdod and could not speak the language of Judah, but spoke according to the language of one or the other people." They spoke the language of Ashdod. And they didn't know their own tongue because they'd been around the wrong influence for too long. And so these words that were used, not by the people of God, but rather by the people of the world, became a stain and a sin to the people of God. Now, a euphemism. I looked up the definition, as we were told to do that in our booklet. And here's what it means: a mild or indirect word or expression substituted for another stronger or plain word. So a mild or indirect word or expression substituted for another stronger or plain word. So these are often idle words, as the Lord had told us not to use, a filler for a certain moment of displeasure. And you see the list there, don't you? On the side, right? And here they are. Consider what these euphemisms mean. Are they part of your everyday speech? Gosh, geez, heck, darn, shoot, freak. All these words here. I'd even add the word sucks. It's said by a lot of youth today as the Bart Simpson word of choice. I mean, that's the one. Where do we get this from? From the Ashdods. You see, he's the one that made that popular. These are idle words, and these are words that do not, again, portray our purity of the Lord. We're trying to milder, to temper the very expression. Now, he says here on the last paragraph on page 21, "Perhaps this seems like a minor issue to you. After all, you may not be intending to say anything inappropriate when you say gosh or shoot. But take this as a challenge to set yourself apart before God and your peers. Don't give others the impression that you're insinuating unholy thoughts. Make a commitment to clean up your speech to the point that no one questions the intentions of your heart." So that's what we're talking about here. We're trying to run towards purity as best we can, so that when people look at us, they'd look at us as they did Daniel. They say, "What fault do we have against this guy? I'd sure like to bring them down because they seem to be doing everything right. We don't like that. We feel better if they're more like us, with sins and faults pouring out right and left." But God is saying, "I put Daniel in the record so that you'd be like a Daniel. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, so you'd be like those brave men as well, standing against the culture of their day. And so that one honest soul out there might say, 'Why don't you talk like the rest of the people talk? When we're all gathered together in the break room and laughing at the joke, I noticed you didn't laugh. Why didn't you laugh? Do you think you're better than us?' No. I used to laugh at those jokes. I used to say those words. But when I became a Christian, the Lord came into my life and I wanted to be different. I want to be more like the Lord. I want to purify my own hearts before the Lord. That's the aim of this. Not just not saying the swear words, but even the words that are more milder in that form as well. Comments about euphemisms? Yes. Whoa, a lot of comments here. Okay. All right. Might have stored up the hornet's nest. Let's see. I don't know who went first. We'll just start way back there with Betty.
There was one this summer on TV. Let's go, Brandon. That is a euphemism.
And that's an example, too, of what we're talking about. You know, fans out there. And that's where it started. It was in a NASCAR race, I believe. And they all started shouting that. But it was euphemistic of something else, as we do know. Right, and so Christians shouldn't be found saying that. Good, okay, who is next? Judy, okay.
It's just a preacher, a Christian asked, well, what are you supposed to say if you slammed your hand or whatever? He said, ouch. I said, but the only profanity was coming up to what he did.
Yeah, right.
What
ouch, that's right. Just say what it felt like, right? Yeah. Yes, Marie. It's a habit, that's right. Right. Right, and it's the pursuit, right, we're talking about. So we want to clean it up as best we can so that there's nothing that they can say evil against us. Titus chapter 2 says that. Sound speech that cannot be condemned. That's what we're aiming for. Did you have your hand? No? All right. All right. Well, we got a few more left. Gossip. So define gossip. And here's what I had, and if you will have something, you could share it too. And that was casual or not constructional speech about others that could harm, and rumors. I'm having a hard time reading my writing here. Oh, often unconstrained as well. So casual speech about others that could harm, often unconstrained. Anyone else have anything on that one? Yes?
I think that pretty much what you said, but I found something that said typically involving details not confirmed as being true.
Right. So that would be more specific to slander when it's definitely false. Right. So gossip could involve things that are true, but it's not necessarily needed or helpful. I like what he said there in that second paragraph. Before you repeat any story, ask yourself, is it true? Is it kind? Is it harmless? Is it necessary? I've often had it, instead of harmless, is it helpful? Right. So is it true? Is it kind? Is it helpful? Is it necessary? And if not, just throw it out, right? It's not necessary. Throw it out. So these are things, Proverbs 16:28, you know, a whisper can separate the best of friends, right? You're about to accept it, right? And then all of a sudden, there's a big blow up. There's a lot of drama caused because of what somebody else said that was not necessary. It wasn't kind. It wasn't helpful. So we've got to be careful about what it is we say about others, especially when they're not around. That's one good litmus test. Would you, could you say that if the person was in their presence? And that's one way to counteract that. Well, you know, I appreciate you telling me that. Let's go ahead and grab the person over here. Let's talk about that with them together. Oh, whoa, no, wait. Well, wait a second then. Is there something going on in your heart that you would not want to share what you share with me with that person? Comments, yes.
You know, they've got these verses there, but also I have 1 Thessalonians 4:11. It says that you also aspire to lead a quiet life, to mind your own business.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. Good. Marie?
There have been many congregations that died because of gossip. If you participate in gossip, you think, well, I'm just telling one person. Well, that one person may tell one person, may tell one person. You're actually a murderer because you kill trust and relationships. And I can't find the verse right now, but it is also a reason a person, if they won't stop, can't be disfellowshipped.
Sure, right. Gossip and busybodies. Yes, that's right. Very true, because it can be so harmful to a congregation, to its peace and its well-being, and can hurt people's lives, genuinely hurt their lives outside of the assembly. And so, yes, it's very, very serious to God, and we have to be very, very careful that we're not guilty of it. Ask ourselves this question: is it true? Is it kind? Is it helpful? Is it necessary? And that'll stop a lot of that. Then last, complaining, an expression of dissatisfaction or annoyance. Oh man, boy, have I fallen into that trap before. You know, it's really easy to complain, isn't it? And as the author says in the book, you know, one of the most famous examples is that of the Israelites, right? And God actually tells the Corinthians in 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 10, don't complain like they did and they fell in the wilderness. So he tells us in the New Testament today, don't complain. And yet it's something that's very, very easy to do. Now he says in that second paragraph, here's some application. We whine to our parents when they ask us to do chores or participate in family activities. We complain about our parents to our friends when we don't like their rules. He wouldn't do that, Andrew, would he? No, the kids here wouldn't do that. Right? We gripe about the preacher being long-winded. No, surely not. Right? Or the song leader being tone-deaf. We complain that we have too much homework or a particular school teacher isn't fair. Do we ever stop and listen to ourselves? If we did, we might destroy ourselves for complaining. You know, that's what God did to the Israelites. He finally said enough was enough. And we might finally say the same to ourselves if we could hear a recording of all the things that we do complain about. So the antidote, the solution to such, he says, is thanksgiving. And that's true. If we offer thanksgiving like the Bible instructs, we'll be too amazed with our blessings and opportunities and too overwhelmed with gratitude for all that God provides. And that's why the Scripture tells us to be thankful for all things. Right? It is the antidote to the complaining within our heart. Yes?
The person once said that it was all too much and they didn't think they could make anything happen. But if you use the proof there, we said God disciplines those whom He loves. He will love, He does it for your own good. We could all see that.
Right, right. Good. Good point. Anybody else? All right, so in summation there, in your pursuit of purity, understand that speech is behavior and words are important. Pay special attention to your speech when your emotions are running high. And free your speech of euphemisms, gossip, and griping or complaining. Just run away from that. You'll find yourself a lot more like the image of God, which is our pursuit in this life. Thank you, everybody, for your good comments. And the next study is purity of body. And I probably will take two lessons on that one, okay? We'll do a little bit extra study on purity of body. So Sunday and Wednesday, the Lord willing, next week. Thank you again.